Okay, let's unpack this. We've got quite a fascinating set of sources here, looking into something that, well, might sound a little unusual at first. Yeah. One of our sources even kicked off with this quote, "Seems like people will figure out how to make a buck out of anything. Lately, this includes death."
Right. It definitely catches your attention.
It does. So we're diving into life settlements and viatical settlements, basically, ways you can potentially get money from a life insurance policy before the person actually passes away. Seems kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it?
It certainly does on the surface. But, you know, when you look into why these things came about, the motivations and the mechanics start to make a bit more sense.
Yeah.
Even if they are pretty complex.
Okay.
So our goal today is really to get a handle on what these settlements are, how they work, and crucially, the things you absolutely need to consider if you ever come across them.
And our sources look at both sides, right? The good and the, well, the not so good.
Exactly. Potential benefits, but also some pretty significant drawbacks. Yeah. We need to cover both.
Got it. So let's start where it seems to have begun. Viatical settlements. What were those exactly?
So viatical settlements really came out of a tough time, medically and socially. Think about people facing a terminal illness.
Okay.
Originally, the definition was like maybe 3 years left to live. Later, it got tightened to under 2 years for someone terminally or chronically ill.
Right.
These folks might have had life insurance policies, sometimes quite large ones, but the money was locked up. It wouldn't pay out until they died.
Which is no help if you need money for treatment now.
Yeah.
Or just comfort.
Precisely. They needed funds immediately for medical bills, quality of life, whatever. So a viatical settlement is when the policyholder, the sick person, sells their life insurance policy.
Sells it. To who?
To investors. They buy the policy, but at a discount, obviously.
Okay.
Then the investors become the new beneficiaries. They wait. And when the original policyholder passes away, they collect the full death benefit.
So the investors are betting on when the person will die, essentially. But the seller gets cash up front.
That's the trade-off. It was a lifeline for some. Let me give you an example. Say someone has a $300,000 policy, and the doctors say maybe 2 years left.
Okay.
Investors might offer, say, $200,000 cash right now. They take over the policy. If the person dies within those 2 years, the investors get the full $300,000.
That's a $100,000 profit for them minus any premiums they might have paid.
Right. Potentially a $50,000 per year return pre-tax in that simplified example.
And you mentioned this really took off in the 80s. Our sources point to the AIDS epidemic.
That's correct. Sadly, the AIDS crisis created a large group of people facing exactly this situation, terminal illness and urgent financial need. The viatical industry basically grew up around that.
But it sounds risky for the investors, too. I mean, what if the person lived longer?
That was the main financial risk, absolutely. Medical science is always advancing. Treatments improved, especially for AIDS, actually.
Ah, so people started living longer than the initial prognosis?
Exactly. Sometimes much longer.
Mm-hmm.
For investors holding those policies, it meant their money was tied up way longer than they planned. It completely changed their expected return. Some might have even outlived the investors.
Okay, so that must have made investors nervous.
It did. They became much pickier, you know?
Uh-huh.
Only wanting the cases that looked like the surest, shortest bets.
Yeah.
The worst cases,
yeah,
as one source put it.
And I bet that created other problems, like fraud.
Unfortunately, yes. Big time. The environment became ripe for it.
What kind of fraud are we talking about?
All sorts. People pretending to be terminally ill when they weren't, just to sell a policy. People selling the same policy multiple times to different investors.
Wow.
And even worse, some operators just took investors' money, promising to buy policies, but then, poof, never bought anything, just vanished with the cash.
That sounds awful. No wonder it got a bad reputation.
It really damaged the market.
Yeah.
Led to regulators stepping in and a lot of legitimate players just backed away.
Okay, so that kind of chaos in the viatical market, did that lead to life settlements? Is that the connection?
Yeah, that's kind of the evolution. Life settlements emerged from that, but they targeted a different group.
Okay, whoa.
Not the terminally ill, but typically older people, say 65 plus, whose health had gotten significantly worse since they first bought their policy.
So still a health decline, but not necessarily, you know, imminent death.
Right. The logic is different, too. Insurance companies, once they issue a policy, generally can't just cut the death benefit or cancel it because you get sick later.
They're locked into the original deal.
Exactly. So for someone whose health has declined, their existing policy might actually be worth more on the open market than the tiny cash surrender value the insurance company would offer them if they wanted out.
That makes sense. The risk profile has changed, making the policy potentially more valuable to a third party. Can you walk us through a scenario?
Sure. Imagine someone's, say, 65 years old, bought a $1 million policy years ago, maybe for estate planning. But since then, maybe they had a stroke or a serious heart condition. Maybe they even used up the cash value in the policy already for medical bills. Now the premiums are going up, becoming unaffordable, and maybe the kids are grown, the estate situation changed, the original reason is gone.
So the policy feels more like a burden than a benefit at this point.
Precisely. So a life settlement investor might come in and say, look, we'll give you $500,000 cash right now for that $1 million policy.
$500,000 up front.
Right. The investor takes over paying the premiums. Their calculation is based on the person's new, shorter life expectancy. Maybe they figure 5 years.
And if the person passes away within that time frame,
the investor collects the full $1 million death benefit. Their profit is that million minus the $500,000 they paid up front and minus the premiums they paid over those 5 years.
It's the same basic idea as viaticals, but for a different demographic and time frame. And the investors now are bigger players.
Yes, the market has definitely matured, or at least shifted. Most life settlement money now comes from large institutions, financial firms, hedge funds.
Hedge funds. Interesting.
Yeah. They often buy up lots of policies and pool them together. It's about diversification, using the law of large numbers.
Getting the risk.
Exactly. If you have hundreds or thousands of policies, the chance of any one person living way longer than expected gets balanced out by others who might pass away sooner. It makes the overall mortality prediction more reliable.
And what kind of returns are they looking for?
Often something comparable to, say, corporate bonds, a steady, predictable return, hopefully not tied directly to the ups and downs of the stock market.
Okay, let's talk about winners and losers here. It sounds like a win for the seller, right? Getting a big chunk of cash.
Well, from the seller's point of view, one source jokingly calls them the old codger. Yeah, it can look great.
Huh, okay.
They get a large sum for something they might have just let lapse anyway because they couldn't afford it or didn't need it, turning a burden into cash.
Sounds good for them. But who's on the losing end? Our sources seem pretty clear on this.
Yeah, the potential big losers are usually the original beneficiaries, often the seller's children.
Because they would have gotten the full death benefit.
Exactly. And usually income tax-free. Selling the policy for, say, half its face value means the heirs get nothing later. It's often a really bad trade from the beneficiary's perspective.
That's a really crucial point. Immediate cash versus a larger tax-free inheritance later. What about the insurance companies? Where do they stand?
It's complicated for them. Generally, when a policy lapses, meaning the owner stops paying premiums, it's profitable for the insurer. They collected premiums, but they never have to pay the death benefit.
Right.
Life settlements reduce lapses. Investors want to keep paying those premiums to get the payout. So fewer lapses could mean lower profits for insurers.
Could that lead to higher premiums for everyone else down the line?
That's the potential long-term concern.
Yeah. Yes.
If lapse rates drop significantly across the board, insurers might have to adjust pricing.
But there's a counter-argument.
Yeah. One source suggests that maybe, just maybe, the idea that life insurance could be sold later might encourage more people to buy it in the first place, seeing it as an asset, which could offset the lower lapse rates.
Interesting theory.
But for now, the understanding is that life settlements are still a pretty small slice of the overall life insurance pie. The impact isn't massive yet.
Okay, so seller gets cash, investor hopes for profit, beneficiaries likely lose out, and the insurance industry is watching closely. Let's dig into some of the specific problems highlighted in the sources.
Definitely. A big one is just suitability. Life settlements generally only make sense if the seller genuinely has no further need for that death benefit, no dependents relying on it, no estate tax issues it was meant to cover.
If you still need the coverage, selling it is probably a bad idea.
Almost certainly. And then there's this whole area of stranger-owned life insurance, SOLI, or sometimes STOLI.
Stranger-owned. What's that about?
This is where things get murky. SOLI, or stranger-originated life insurance, is basically setting up a life insurance policy with the main plan right from the start, being to sell it off to investors.
So not for protection, but purely as an investment scheme.
Pretty much. Often pitched to wealthy seniors who might not even need the insurance for family reasons. The pitch is sometimes like free money. Buy this policy, hold it for the minimum contestability period, usually 2 years, then flip it to investors for a profit.
Free money always sounds suspicious. What are the catches?
Well, several big ones. First, it really calls into question the whole tax advantage status of life insurance. If it's just being used as a short-term investment flip, why should the internal growth be tax-deferred?
Good point. Tax rules are usually based on the idea of protection.
Right.
Exactly. Then there are ethical questions. And frankly, some sources suggest even wealthy people can be, well, stupid in these deals, as one source put it. They might take a relatively small upfront payment compared to what the investors eventually stand to make. The investors are playing a long game. The seller gets quick cash, but maybe not the best value.
Mm-hmm. And agents are involved in pushing these.
Oh, yeah. That's the hidden suitability issue. Agents can make big commissions selling the initial policy, and sometimes another fee for arranging the sale to investors later.
Sounds like a conflict of interest.
It certainly can be. The risk is the agent advises someone to sell a perfectly good existing policy, maybe one they've had for years, just so they can sell them a new, maybe more expensive or less suitable one, purely to start this SOI process and generate fees.
And that churns up costs.
Significant costs. Studies, like one by Deloitte and UConn, found really high transaction costs in these deals, eating away at the value.
Okay, another big legal term came up, insurable interest. What's the problem there?
Insurable interest is fundamental. You can't just take out life insurance on a random stranger. You need a legitimate reason to suffer financially or emotionally if they die. It prevents gambling on lives.
Well, makes sense.
The issue with SOI is that the investors who ultimately own the policy often have no relationship with the insured person. The whole arrangement might be designed specifically to get around insurable interest laws, sometimes using trusts or other structures.
So the policy itself might not be legally sound.
Potentially, yes. An insurance company could later challenge the policy, arguing there was no valid insurable interest at the start and refused to pay the claim.
What happens then?
Well, here's a twist. One source calls it a heads I win, tails you lose situation for the investors. If the policy pays out, great. If the insurer challenges it successfully, the investors might then sue the estate of the person who died.
Sue the estate? On what grounds?
Claiming they were defrauded into the deal, seeking damages equal to the death benefit they expected. It puts the heirs in a terrible spot.
Wow, that's quite a potential mess. Any other shady practices?
Rebating is mentioned. That's when an agent gives back part of their commission, often a large cash payment, to convince someone, usually a wealthy person, to buy the policy needed for a SOI deal.
Is that legal?
Often, no. Most states ban rebating. It's seen as an improper inducement and can suggest collusion.
Okay. This all sounds pretty complex and potentially risky. One source asked, who ends up owning your life? That sounds ominous.
Yeah, that quote, I think, from Steve Lineberg highlights a real concern. Once you sell your policy, it can be bought and sold again in the secondary market. You have no control over who ultimately holds it.
And that could be anyone.
Potentially. Lineberg apparently worried about it ending up with, quote, Tony Soprano, meaning undesirable entities. It also draws parallels to those old death pools in Victorian England where people literally bet on who would die next.
Yikes. Not a comforting thought. And finally, the insurance companies themselves are worried, not just about losing profits from lapses.
No, it's bigger than that for them.
Yeah.
Their nightmare scenario, according to the sources, is that Congress sees all this activity, sees life insurance being treated like an investment via life settlements, and decides to change the tax rules.
Taxing the cash value buildup.
Exactly. Taking away the tax advantages that life insurance has always enjoyed, that would be a massive blow to the entire industry.
Okay, so lots of potential problems. But we need to be balanced. Our sources also presented the pro side reasons why life settlements can be a valid choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's important to understand that perspective. From this viewpoint, a life settlement is simply selling an asset, the policy, for more than its surrender value, but less than the death benefit.
A fair market transaction for an asset you no longer need.
That's the argument. The reality is many seniors do find themselves with policies that just don't fit anymore. Maybe their needs changed. Maybe premiums got too high.
And the insurance company isn't offering much help.
Often, no. The standard options are usually let it lapse and get nothing, or surrender it for a typically very low cash value, often just pennies on the dollar compared to the face amount.
So compared to those options, getting a larger sum through a life settlement looks pretty good.
It can look significantly better, yes. Proponents see it as empowering consumers, treating life insurance like any other manageable asset.
What drives people to consider it, according to this view?
Several things. A shift in thinking, seeing the policy as an asset. Financial advisors may be pointing out that a policy is underperforming.
Huh?
Life changes, kids are independent, estate plans change, or just being unhappy with the current policy or unable to afford rising premiums.
And they feel the insurance company isn't giving them good alternatives.
Often, yes. Policyholders might ask, can I get some of my premium money back? Can I switch to something better? Can I sell this fairly? And the answers they get from the insurer are often limited to just lapse or surrender.
So the life settlement market steps in to offer that third way.
Exactly. Providing potentially much more cash than the surrender value. One source cited a Lisa statistic from 2005 saying settlements paid out 371% more than surrender values on average back then.
That's a big difference. Okay, briefly, how does premium financing fit into this picture?
Right. Premium financing is becoming more common. Basically, you get a loan to pay the life insurance premiums, and the policy itself acts as the collateral for that loan.
So you don't have to pay premiums out of pocket.
Or you pay less,
mm-hmm.
or you don't have to sell other assets. It's used in estate planning, business planning, for people needing large policies.
But it sounds like it could be linked to those problematic Stuello deals.
That's the danger zone. There's legitimate premium financing for a real insurance need where the person intends to quack the policy. And then there's financing set up specifically to acquire a policy just to sell it off quickly to investors who lack insurable interest. That's illegal SDOI.
So the intent behind it is key again.
Absolutely critical. Is it financing for genuine protection or financing as the first step in an illegal speculative scheme? Very different things.
Okay. So thinking like a financial professional, or just for you, the listener, trying to understand this, what's a good roadmap?
Well, let's recap the basics. Life settlement is selling that unneeded policy for more than cash value, less than death benefit. It's a third option.
Potentially offering much more than surrendering.
Right. Investors like it because the returns aren't necessarily tied to the stock market swings.
And the typical candidate is?
Generally, age 70 or older, policy face value maybe $250,000 plus, and crucially, the market value is higher than the cash surrender value.
What determines that market value?
Key factors are the death benefit amount, the future premiums needed, and the big one, the insured's life expectancy.
Shorter life expectancy means higher value.
Generally, yes. Because the investor expects to pay premiums for less time and receive the death benefit sooner. The basic idea, simplified, is present value of the death benefit minus the present value of future premiums and costs.
Sounds complex to calculate accurately.
It is. These aren't simple deals. You really need experienced advisors. And remember, regulations differ state by state on licensing, disclosures, all that.
And sellers can work with a broker or directly with a provider.
Yes.
Yeah.
A broker can shop the policy around to multiple buyers, which might get you a better offer. A provider just makes their own direct bid.
What's the process usually look like?
Application, policy documents, then a life expectancy assessment is done. The settlement company figures out an offer. If you accept, there's a closing package, funds go into escrow usually, the insurer is notified ownership is changing, and then the money goes to the seller.
And taxes. We need to remember the proceeds aren't always tax-free.
Super important. Generally, amount up to your total premiums paid back is tax-free. Amount above premiums, up to the cash surrender value, is ordinary income. Anything above the cash surrender value is capital gains.
But it's complicated.
Yes, especially figuring the exact cost basis and things like the cost of insurance. Definitely need professional tax advice. And the money could be subject to creditor claims, too. Also, if death is expected within 2 years, the rules might be different again, possibly tax-free, but it varies. Get advice.
Got it. And just quickly on the history this all started with.
Back in the 80s, the AIDS crisis, leading to viaticals for the terminally ill.
Then medicine improved.
People live longer, so the market shifted towards life settlements for older folks with health declines, but not necessarily terminal.
And the legal basis for selling a policy at all
goes way back to a 1911 Supreme Court case, Grigsby v. Russell. It basically said a life insurance policy is private property you can sell or assign.
Even that far back. But the industry had bumps along the road.
Oh, yeah. Early problems with fraud and viaticals, ongoing worries about speculation, which led to more state regulation over time.
And the tax question keeps coming up.
Yes. The IRS has issued rulings clarifying how proceeds are generally taxed, that breakdown we just discussed. The 2009 Senate Aging Committee hearing also looked into it.
But the details matter.
Absolutely. Especially that cost of insurance component. Again, professional tax help is essential. Don't guess on this stuff.
Okay, so wrapping this all up. Life settlements, viatical settlements. They're complex financial tools. They can offer a way to get value from a policy before death, but wow, there are a lot of strings attached.
That sums it up well. There could be real benefits, especially if someone has urgent needs and few other options, but they are definitely not right for everyone.
The downsides seem pretty significant.
They are. The impact on heirs, the ethical questions around SLI, the legal risks, the tax complexities. It's a minefield if you're not careful.
So the absolute bottom line message has to be
caution and get expert, unbiased advice.
Yeah.
Seriously, talk to financial advisors, attorneys who know this specific niche before you even think about doing anything. Don't go it alone.
Absolutely. You know, considering how something we think of as pretty standard, like life insurance, can have these incredibly complex secondary markets and raise all these deep legal and ethical issues, it really makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Hmm.
What other financial products that seem familiar on the surface might have similar hidden layers, unexpected risks, or maybe even surprising values tucked away inside them?
That's a great question to ponder.
Definitely something to keep exploring and questioning in the whole financial world around us. Thanks. This was incredibly insightful.
My pleasure. It's a fascinating, if complicated, area,